live and local,
across the city
and South Cambridgeshire.
This is Lee Chambers.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Ah, we're not worthy. We really aren't worthy. Maid of Orleans by Orchestral Manoeuvres in the Dark, and they are coming to Cambridge on the 7th of November. They're playing the Cambridge Corn Exchange as part of their Architecture and More tour. And I had the great pleasure of talking to Andy McCluskey from OMD about the tour. Warning and apologies, extreme fangirling ahead. One of the best gigs, if not the best gig I ever went to, was in 1980, I think, Sheffield City Hall, to see Orchestral Manoeuvres in the Dark. Then I saw you a couple of years ago here in Cambridge as a special guest of AHA, when frankly, you blew AHA away. The energy is still there in those live performances. You obviously still enjoy it.
Oh, Lee, that's really nice of you to say. Thank you. Yes, I absolutely do. I think way back in 1980, my energy probably came from my nervousness and fear. but I think now I've mellowed a bit with age. I think after 40 odd years, I reckon that if people actually want to watch us, they probably like us, so we're on safe ground. Yeah, it was a great fun tour with AHA. It was an opportunity for us to get out there and steal some of their audience, and I think we did.
You did definitely. What makes a good live performance? Them.
There's different ways of doing it, but I think that, to be honest, the essential ingredients are good music, good crew to make sure it looks and sounds right, because, you know, it doesn't matter how good the band is, if the people who are mixing it or lighting it don't do a good job, it's not as good as it should be. But ultimately, it's quite simple. It's the energy exchange between the audience and the stage. You know, if you pour the correct amount of energy and passion into the performance, hopefully the audience respond and then they pour their energy back to you, and it just becomes this positive feedback cycle.
And we need that now, don't we, after COVID? You're on the road again. Oh God, I bet you can't wait to get out there.
Oh, it's been a long slog. I mean, obviously, you know, some people have died, some people have been ill, a lot of people have had their lives frustrated and changed. Yeah, we are all desperate to get back to, you know, who knew normal was so great? We just took it for granted. But yeah, we cannot wait to play. We've done a few festivals, but, you know, the audiences are so far away from you at festivals. I'm looking forward to being indoors, having a great time, and really just cannot wait. And obviously, we're back at the old Cornbridge Corn Exchange again, the Cambridge Corn Exchange. Cornbridge Cane Exchange. I put my teeth back in.
Will you get time to look around Cambridge while you're here? Because it's quite a brilliant schedule for you.
We'll try. I mean, I've enjoyed Cambridge last few times we've been in town. And I mean, it's a beautiful city. I'm a big fan of art galleries, so I've enjoyed the last two visits going to art galleries. But we will see. One of the issues on this tour is that in order to make sure that we are looking after ourselves and making sure the tour happens, is we're going to be quite bubbled in our protocol. I'm not sure we're going to be going out that much because we want to make sure that we all stay well.
And what have you been up to during lockdown then? How did you pass the months, pass the years?
To begin with, like everybody else, I was enjoying that sunny 2 months of holidays in April and May last year. And then the boredom set in. Actually, what I've done is I have rediscovered the creative power of boredom. To that end, I've been in my programming room and there will be a new OMD album.
Oh, that's very exciting to hear.
Thank you.
This tour is referencing the Architecture and Morality album, isn't it? Which I couldn't believe. When did that come out? 1981.
In November, it's going to be exactly 40 years.
And the success of that album, you said, surprised you.
Every success in the early days surprised us because we weren't playing by the rules, which is why I think when you listen back to our songs from the early 80s, they still kind of don't fit into any other genre. They just sound like us being us, which is no bad thing. Yeah, I mean, we started the band in 78 as a dare to do a one-off gig. That's why we came up with the preposterous name. It didn't matter. And then we just did what we wanted. We built our own recording studio with the advance from our first album because we expected to fail. We were surprised the first album was successful. Second album was even bigger because Enola Gay was on it. And then the third album, we kept changing our sound as well. We didn't even follow a formula. You know, we did this big choral, ambient, melancholy album with choirs and wispy sounds on it. And it was just even bigger than everything we'd done previously. It was incredible. And we were still kids. We were all still like nearly 21 years old on our third album.
And two songs about Joan of Arc. I mean, who'd do that today on one album?
Oh, and I tried so hard to make the record company release them under the same name. And they weren't having any of it. They changed the names. Said, no. People think they're buying the same record again. So that we've got Joan of Arc and Maid of Orleans. But the funny thing is when most people talk about Joan of Arc, they actually mean Maid of Orleans. But it was, yeah. I was determined to... I mean, listen, Paul and I are geeks. He built model trains and was into electronics, and I built Airfix aeroplane models and was into art and history. So when I became fascinated by Joan of Arc, I literally went to the library, because this was obviously before Wikipedia, and got books out and researched her and made notes. And the first song I wrote was Maid of Orleans, the waltz version, and I didn't think it was working. So I put it to one side and I wrote Joan of Arc, which I think was on the... something like the 550th anniversary of the English burning her to death, which seemed an appropriate anniversary to write a song on. That was the one I thought was going to be on the album. And then Paul and Malcolm came into the studio and said, what's happened to that waltz Joan of Arc? I said, no, I've written another one. I said, no, Malcolm said, literally, let me play on it. I'll make it a hit. And he did, and he did. So,
and all good things come in three. So is there going to be another Joan of Arc song?
No, I think writing two was fairly cathartic. I think I've done it now.
You're Joan of Arc'd out.
I am Joan of Arc'd out, if there could be such a phrase, yes.
And so many of your tracks now have gone into the canon, you know, they're classics. Nola Gay, you must know, is used by some teachers to teach about the dropping of the atomic bomb on Hiroshima. How does that feel?
Good. We're inspiring another generation of geeks. Because we didn't set out to be a pop band, because we set out to just do music that we were interested in ourselves, we didn't want to follow what we consider to be the boring stereotypes. And we certainly didn't want to sing, you know, ooh, baby, I love you. Now, I mean, love and feelings are the most powerful things for humanity on the planet. But try to write lyrics about them that are not just the same old cliches. So, we wrote about the airplane that dropped the atom bomb. We wrote about oil refineries and geopolitics. And I don't know about writing about Catholic saints really changed the world much. But things that we just thought were more interesting than the usual subjects.
You're still singing these songs and singing them, as I say, with great gusto. You're still enjoying these songs.
Oh, yeah. Because we stopped for a while, you know, the band stopped and then reformed again. This seems to be like a very fortuitous and enjoyable, blessed second bite of the cherry, you know, and so we're loving every minute of it. And I think that's what shows, you know, maybe that was possibly the difference between us and Aha when you saw us a few, you know, that we are loving every minute of being back together. We are friends and we have fun. If that stops, people can tell on stage. They can tell that the rapport is gone and the chemistry isn't there and that you're not enjoying it. And you know what? These songs have been the markers on a very blessed journey that we've had. They have been very good to us. So when you play them, when you sing them, you play them properly and with energy, because they're our fond memories and they're the audience's fond memories. So treat them with respect.
And it must be nice having so many to choose from. And I think that gig that I mentioned at Sheffield City Hall, I think you played Electricity twice because you didn't have enough material for the encore. I wasn't complaining because that's such a fabulous song.
Yeah, I mean, in 1980 at City Hall, we would have only had two albums and quite a few of the songs we wouldn't have played. We never played live. So, yeah, we probably only had about 16, 17 songs we were going to play. So, yeah, Electricity often got repeated. Now we've got over 200 songs. Now the problem is, which ones are we not going to play, Roland? Which ones do we have to play twice?
What do you think about the music industry now? I mean, it's dominated a lot by what's popular on YouTube or by talent shows. What do you think about the quality of music that's being produced?
You know, when I was a kid, I hated most music. I could count the things I loved on one hand. You know, there was Kraftwerk and Neu from Dusseldorf. There was Bowie, Roxy Music, Brian Eno, and the Velvet Underground, and I hated everything else. So in some respects, you're asking the wrong person, because I've never had very broad tastes. Obviously, yeah, the advent of the reality TV show, you know, Pick a Pop Star for Christmas, was pretty appalling to somebody who wanted music to be more than just about, are you pretty and, you know, how good is your voice? Because I'm not pretty and my voice is I can sing my own songs with conviction. The biggest change really has been the change in the technology. 1980, when you were seeing us it was vinyl or cassette, and then we'd gone through CDs. And now, apart from the few people, bless them, who still like to collect proper heavy vinyl, nobody owns anything anymore. There's no physical product to hold in your hand. There's no big 12-inch artwork. It's just a file, and you can copy it, delete it, send it to your mates, and nobody even owns anything now. They just stream. So it's a very, very different world. If I say I don't like it, I'll just sound like some old git complaining, so I'm not going to say that.
And lots of 80s pop stars have appeared on reality TV shows in the jungle or Strictly.
No, and I wouldn't. Although I think Jeremy Vine seems to think I should go on Strictly Come Dancing.
I think so as well.
Could you imagine any partner getting anywhere near me if I did the windmill dance that I'm renowned for? I'd be killing people.
For that alone, you should go on, surely.
No. You know, I love what I do. I don't do this because I want to be on telly or I want to be rich or famous. It's nice that people recognise our music. It's nice that I did earn some money out of it, but they were kind of byproducts of just two teenagers from the wrong side of the River Mersey just wanting to do what we wanted to do and being consistently surprised that people wanted to buy our records.
Absolute privilege to talk to him. Andy McCluskey from Orchestral Manoeuvres in the Dark. 7th of November, they're playing the Cambridge Corn Exchange. Cambridge Com Exchange or whatever. If you want to book those tickets, and I cannot recommend them live highly enough, I've seen them several times over the years, then it's cambridgelive.org.uk where you can get those tickets from, or the website omd.uk.com. That's the Architecture and Mortar on the 7th of November. They are at the Cambridge Corn Exchange. It's 10:45.
Cambridge 105 Radio.